Welcome to the Rick and Rob Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
And I'm Rick Drewer.
Straight off the top, in our first show, we want to pay tribute to one of the boss's greatest sports persons and community person, Brian Hearn, who was boss and mayor from 1996 to 2014 and chairman of the Angaston Council 10 years previous to that as well, in a 37-year council-related stint. Brian played Sheffield Shield cricket from 1957 to 1969. He played 31 games, including the 63-64 Sheffield Shield victory by South Australia, with such illuminary teammates as Sir Garfield Sobers, Neil Hawke, Ian Chappell, Les Favell, and KG Cunningham. Some of these players I'm sure you played with, Rick.
Yes, I did indeed. I had a great deal of pleasure in playing against Brian and, in fact, just about every one of the ones that you've just mentioned. Fortunately, I played against Gary Sobers when I was still at school with a bit of success. So, yes, it was very sad to hear of his passing.
And just to give people an idea about how good a cricketer he was, his highest score with the bat was 79, and with the ball was 5 for 62. So he was a little bit of an all-rounder. And he won two, what's now known as the Bradman Medals, as the best player in the state in district cricket. He played in four premierships with Kensington. Even though he still remained living at Angaston, he played for the Kensington Browns and holds the record for the most wickets, A-grade wickets at the club, with 538. Although Jamie Pennelly, the current player, picked up seven wickets on the weekend for his 537, one behind Brian.
Fantastic performance. In those days, and there was obviously variation in the Kensington side, but there were some great names amongst the Kensington players of that era, Parkinson, Hearn himself, Christofani, Doc Oaten, Crewy Glover, Peter Clements and Alan Jack Frost, who was a very good opening bowler for South Australia as well. So they were a very strong unit.
Absolutely. And the funny thing is that we're talking about the Bradman Medal now. Brian won the 75-76 medal the year before they changed the name to the Bradman Medal. So he didn't really win a Bradman Medal, but he won two of the preceding awards. Now, Brian's got a unique distinction of being the third of five generations of the Hearn family to play cricket for Angaston, which is an absolute astounding information. Yeah. But also with football, he was the first of three, his son William and his grandson Shannon, who is a captain of the West Coast Eagles, won medals playing in the Boston Light and Gawler football leagues. Brian won his in 1970 in A-grade footy, while William and Shannon both won under 15 medals. And interesting, going on to Shannon, who recently played in the losing AFL grand final, he played against his teammate with the West Coast, Sam Butler, in an under 15 Boston Light and Gawler footy grand final in 2003 in the under-15s. Sam was with South Gawler, and beat Angaston.
Oh, very, very interesting. Sam Butler, by the way, was the only remaining member of West Coast Eagles premiership. So he's been around for a long time, Sam Butler.
Yeah, 2006. Mm. He was, 19 years old or something. And, of course, they both played for Central Districts in the SNFL, as did William Hearn, Shannon's dad. And amazingly, when Shannon was 15, he played in an under-19 premiership team with Central Districts. And then in 2004 and 2005, he played in league premierships before he went over to the West Coast.
Well, Sam, actually, I had the pleasure of teaching him at one stage, and he had to make a big decision about where he'd choose his sporting career, because he was an outstanding soccer player as well,
yes,
which I think contributed to his skills as far as being an AFL footballer goes. But he probably would have made just as big a success in soccer as he obviously has in AFL.
if memory serves me correctly, when he changed to footy with South Gawler in the under-15s, he was booting 10, 15 goals a game in a handful of games, which changed his career from a soccer player to a football player. So getting on to the AFL Grand Final, with the Hawks winning their three-peat, the first time they've won three in a row, just an amazing statistic. What did you think of the Grand Final this year?
Well, I actually thought that what happened would happen. In analysing the match before it started, I was amazed at looking at the playing list of Hawthorn and seeing the experience. So many players with over 200 games, 150 games, as against West Coast, who really were the surprise packet of the year. I mean, an incredible performance to come from outside the eight to play in a grand final, but lacking that experience for the big time. And I was just yet again amazed that Hawthorn's elite, when the going gets tough, the Hodges, the Mitchells, the Riolis, Roughhead, Gunston, Burgoyne, they play the big games, big time.
Now, something, an amazing statistic about Alistair Clarkson, who's coached four premierships with Hawthorn. He got his start coaching Central Districts back in 2001, 2002, and took them to the premiership in 2001. And then he did some assistant roles at Port Adelaide Power and several other clubs. But interestingly, in his time at Hawthorn, he's never actually won the Coach of the Year in the AFL.
It amazes me to look at the list of coaches since 2003, when they introduced the Coaching of the Year award, that a man who has coached an AFL team to four premierships, three in a row, and has not yet been awarded the Coach of the Year seems somewhat inconsistent to me, but there's many wiser heads than myself.
Now, I believe you've made a list of all the Coaches of the Year. If you want to just sort of expand on that, where they're from and who they are.
Well, if we start with the initial year of 2003, it was Paul Ruse. And just quickly going up the list to
from
the
Sydney,
present
yeah.
time, Sydney, you had Mark Williams from Port, Neil Craig from Adelaide in 2005, Worsfold in six when West Coast won the premiership, I guess. And then Mark Thompson twice in a row, 06 and 07. Ross Lyon in 08, which would have been in his St Kilda time. Mick Malthouse, 9. Worsfold again in 10. John Longmire in 11. Hinckley in 12. Longmire again, 13. Luke Beveridge is this year's. So it's an interesting list, but I find it a little hard to understand that Clarkson is an honour.
Have you got any comments about any of the winners there at all?
I'm a little surprised in particularly, I think, the Neil Craig one. Adelaide did finish, I think, minor premiers, but failed to carry it on in the finals. And I think Ross Lyon is a little bit interesting as well. He's obviously very successful as a coach, particularly in defence, but I think Ross Lyon's big problem at St Kilda and at over in the West is that you've got to kick enough goals to win a game of football, and he's hasn't been able to achieve that come finals time so far.
Yeah, it seems to be a little bit of a blight on the game, the defensive mindsets of so many teams led by people like Ross and that, but There are sort of people trying to break away from that and kick goals.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's proved beyond doubt that you do have to have good defence, but if you haven't got the ability to kick enough goals, then you're not going to win games. And I think Hawthorn have proved that, and I think that's the formula. They have a very, very fine defence, but they certainly have the ability to kick lots of goals from lots of different contributors.
This is a Rick and Rob sports show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
And I'm Rick Drew.
Now, carrying on about the goal kicking, I did a few statistics with the SNFL Ken Farmer medalist for the top goal kicker. In the 1990s, in that decade, the average total for the Ken Farmer medalists was 96 goals a season. From 2000 to 2009, it dropped to 80. And then in the last 6 years, it's dropped to under 60, which I think reflects what's happened into the AFL to a certain degree with the drying up of the goals. And the century goal kickers are becoming scarce.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think the other factor contributing to that is that not only are defences becoming tighter and tighter, but the only way around it is to have various players being able to score goals rather than relying on your Tony Modra or your spearhead, which in yesteryear was the style and the manner in which you scored. Whereas now, if you look at the stats for most AFL teams, they're not very happy unless there's half a dozen or more contributors to the goal-kicking list, which gives far more alternatives in scoring.
I wonder if we'll ever have a game with 21 or 22 players kicking a goal.
Well, it's possible.
It would give us a high-scoring game.
It would. I mean, I think an indication of the way things have changed is that you're getting half-backs kicking goals, and midfielders, all of whom, in the era in which I played, for instance, if you're a half-back and kicked a goal, you'd probably never play again.
I think it stems from some of the half-backers, where the half-backers became what the wingman used to be, and Andrew McLeod sort of epitomised that quite a bit when he was with the Crows in the 1990s. He was the first player I noticed sort of doing that, and I think that's where a lot of the changes with scoring came about, and I suppose the answer to that was a defensive mindset that we have today.
Yes, I think that's so true. And I think the other great contributor, and obviously it is one of the factors or factors and physical features in looking at draft players, is that the speed of the game has become so much more that it's your midfielders, your wingers, your half-backs who have the ability to cover the ground to open up opportunities for scoring to occur, which in the old days certainly wasn't there.
And one of the things they've brought in over the years, over the last 5 years, in fact, is the interchange, the amount of interchanges they've had is incredible. And I believe in the AFL they're dropping it to 90 next year, and even better for the SNFL, 50. What effect do you think that will have? Because the players won't have that rest period and they'll get tired. Do you think that will open the game up a bit?
I think it will open the game up a bit, because I think the problem with the huge number of interchange and the virtual unlimited ability to use it, which is now going to be curbed, is that the players would spend whichever period of time on the field at their absolute intense best, whereas now, with the lack of interchange or the number being reduced, there's going to be people on the field who can't perform necessarily at their absolute ultimate peak intensity for as long, and therefore I think there'll be opportunities open up. And I think it also will change the way in which ruck contests occur, because I think we might find this year that a lot of teams will run a ruckman off the bench, whereas up until now in this change that hasn't been occurring.
And the other thing, of course, is how often do you see someone kick a goal and they run straight to the bench? Whereas now, if they stay in that position, who knows what can happen?
Exactly.
It'll create a more of a contest.
Yeah.
The other rule they've put in with the SNFL for next year is any ball that goes out of bounds from a handball or kick that hasn't been touched will be a free kick to the other side. Personally, I'm a little bit against that, because I like defenders to have a little bit of an out when they're when they're trying to beat two, three opponents and there's no one upfield to kick it to.
Yes, I'm a little bit mixed feelings over that issue. To the best of my knowledge, I think Australian football is the only sport in the world where you're not penalised for being the last person or side to touch the ball when it goes out. I mean,
what about lacrosse?
There's
no boundaries.
No boundaries. But if you take a game of tennis, if you're playing, you know, if we're playing each other in a game of tennis, well, if I hit it out, then I lose the point.
Depends what John McEnroe thinks.
Yes, that's still so true. But there is a rule that says you can't deliberately send the ball out in AFL. However, it is, has considerable loose interpretation and sometimes bemusing interpretation when an umpire will suggest it has been deliberately placed outside the boundary line, whereas on another occasion it's ignored. And if we can tighten up something along those lines, then I think probably the better. I think if even though it may be difficult for people to get their heads around the possible new rule, I do believe, like any other rule that's been introduced in any other game, there is a way around, not around it, but you will adjust to it. And maybe you can't afford to hug the boundary line as once was the tactical move.
Just sort of looking at the SNFL, Central District, who is obviously our local club, had the dominant period from 2000 to 2011, where they 12 consecutive grand finals and 9 premierships. It was obviously a glory period, but since losing to the Eagles in the 11 grand final, they hadn't won a final before this year. They were struggling. They were kicked. They didn't even make the finals last season, and they scraped in with the last game of the season with a win over South Adelaide. Then they beat the reigning premiers Norwood for their first ever elimination final win against anyone. Then they beat Port Adelaide in the first semi. They did lose to West in the Plumbie final, but that's incredible for a club like, you know, Central Districts, with using so many of the Blosser and Light and Gawler kids in the lineup, actually getting back and winning and bringing some hope back into the northern area.
Well, I just think they are a remarkable side and have been for a long period of time. Dare I say, they probably are the Hawthorn of the SANFL, in that not only is it very much more difficult to keep a regular unit together, but to be as incredibly successful as Centrals have been for such a long period of time. And even in those last couple of years where they mightn't have been in the glory days, they're still around the mark. And the fact that they maybe struggled to get into the finals but then could take a couple of scalps is a huge compliment to the club and everybody associated with it, I believe.
Also, when you look at the award winners, I mean, young Travis Schiller won the best and fairest, and his brother Jared won it last year. You know, just incredible that two lads from New Eupta. And then you got Paul Thomas, the captain of the club, who, even though he's not a Gawler Barossa guy, he's taught up here at Trinity and comes from Elizabeth. And then you've got a number of the players. You know, half the team is made up of guys from the Barossa and Gawler in the Elizabeth region, and that's incredible considering the amount of football teams in Central's development area compared to others. It's just a feather in the cap of the northern region, in my opinion.
Oh, I absolutely agree. There's no one comes close to them in the modern era, and their results have indicated that to be so. They really are the standout.
Mm-hmm. And it was good to see West Adelaide win the premiership after a 32-year drought. They changed their style of game. They were very defensive under Collins, and now they've under Mark Micken, they've changed it up, and they were an offensive unit, and it was quite good to actually see a game. It was most goals kicked rather than holding the team to less goals than you kick.
Well, exactly, and I think that's what we mentioned earlier when we were talking AFL. I still believe you've got to have a good defence, but if you haven't got good offence and kick enough goals, you're not going to win.
And just to sort of finish off this football talk, we'll have a quick look at the Barossa and Gawler. We had New Eupta go through the season undefeated, and it's incredible to be undefeated in any competition. It's very hard to do, although they did have a draw in the night game, Anzac Day, with Gawler Central, who were the reigning premiers. And they beat Gawler Central in the grand final. Tiger beat Tiger for the first time. And they had guys like with AFL experience, like Nash and Slattery. It's good for the comp that they're attracting those types of players.
Yes, absolutely. Any sport to go through any season undefeated is an achievement that very rarely occurs. And it's interesting if you look at the A grade, the reserves, the senior colts, and the junior colts that Newry and Gawler Central's feature very, very strongly in all of those divisions, which suggests that they're going to be around and near the top for some time to come, I would think.
And my personal highlight this year was seeing Brad Mercer kick his 100 goals in the primary final for Gawler Central. It's one of the two beautiful things about football is the centenary goal kicker and the high mark.
Yes. It would be lovely if we saw more of the high mark, but that's probably not going to occur the way the game's going these days.
So that ends the first show, the Rick and Rob Sports Show. Thank you very much.
And thank you.